But there's the catch. I'd like to live that seemingly carefree and happy life for an evening, a few days, a week. At the end of that week, I'd be exhausted and would be grateful to the first person to talk to me about something meaningful. I want friends, not admirers. People who respect me for my character and my deeds, not my flattering smile. The circle around me would be much smaller, but what does that matter, as long as they're sincere? In spite of everything, I wasn't altogether happy in 1942. I often felt I'd been deserted, but because I was on the go all day long, I didn't think about it. I enjoyed myself as much as I could, trying consciously or unconsciously to fill the void with jokes. Looking back, I realize that this period of my life has irrevocably come to a close. My happy-go-lucky, carefree school days are gone forever. I don't even miss them. I've outgrown them. I can no longer just kid around, since my serious side is always there. I see my life up to New Year's 1944 as if I were looking through a powerful magnifying glass. When I was at home, my life was filled with sunshine. Then, in the middle of 1942, everything changed overnight. The quarrels, the accusations. I couldn't take it all in. I was caught off guard, and the only way I knew to keep my bearings was to talk back. The first half of 1943 brought crying spells, loneliness, and the gradual realization of my faults and shortcomings, which were numerous and seemed even more so. I filled the day with chatter, tried to draw Pim closer to me, and failed. This left me on my own to face the difficult task of improving myself so I wouldn't have to hear their reproaches, because they made me so despondent. The second half of the year was slightly better. I became a teenager and was treated more like a grown-up. I began to think about things and to write stories, finally coming to the conclusion that the others no longer had anything to do with me. They had no right to swing me back and forth like a pendulum on a clock. I wanted to change myself in my own way. I realized I could manage without my mother, completely and totally, and that hurt. But what affected me even more was the realization that I was never going to be able to confide in father. I didn't trust anyone but myself. After New Year's, the second big change occurred. My dream, through which I discovered my longing for a boy, not for a girlfriend, but for a boyfriend. I also discovered an inner happiness underneath my superficial and cheerful exterior. From time to time, I was quiet. Now I live only for Peter, since what happens to me in the future depends largely on him. I lie in bed at night after ending my prayers with the words, Ich danke dir für all das Gute und Liebe und Schöne. And I'm filled with joy. I think of going into hiding, my health, and my whole being as das Gute. Peter's love, which is still so new and fragile and which neither of us dares to say aloud. The future, happiness, and love as das Liebe. The world, nature, and the tremendous beauty of everything. All that splendor as das Schöne. At such moments, I don't think about all the misery, but about the beauty that still remains. This is where Mother and I differ greatly. Her advice in the face of melancholy is, think about all the suffering in the world and be thankful you're not part of it. My advice is, go outside, to the country, enjoy the sun and all nature has to offer. Go outside and try to recapture the happiness within yourself. Think of all the beauty in yourself and in everything around you and be happy. I don't think Mother's advice can be right. Because what are you supposed to do if you become part of the suffering? You'd be completely lost. On the contrary, beauty remains, even in misfortune. If you just look for it, you discover more and more happiness and regain your balance. A person who's happy will make others happy. A person who has courage and faith will never die in misery. Yours, Anne M. Frank. Wednesday, March 8th, 1944. Margot and I have been writing each other notes, just for fun, of course. Anne, it's strange, but I can only remember the day after what has happened the night before. For example, I suddenly remembered that Mr. Dussel was snoring loudly last night. It's now 2:45 on Wednesday afternoon, and Mr. Dussel is snoring again, which is why it flashed through my mind, of course. When I had to use the potty, I deliberately made more noise to get the snoring to stop. Marga, which is better, the snoring or the gasping for air? Anne, the snoring's better because it stops when I make noise without waking the person in question. What I didn't write to Margot, but what I'll confess to you, dear Kitty, is that I've been dreaming of Peter a great deal. The night before last, I dreamed I was skating right here in our living room with that little boy from the Apollo ice skating rink. He was with his sister, the girl with the spindly legs, who always wore the same blue dress. I introduced myself, overdoing it a bit, and asked him his name. It was Peter. In my dream, I wondered just how many Peters I actually knew. Then I dreamed we were standing in Peter's room, facing each other beside the stairs. I said something to him. He gave me a kiss, but replied that he didn't love me all that much and that I shouldn't flirt. In a desperate and pleading voice, I said, "I'm not flirting, Peter." When I woke up, I was glad Peter hadn't said it after all. Last night, I dreamed we were kissing each other. But Peter's cheeks were very disappointing. They weren't as soft as they looked. They were more like father's cheeks, the cheeks of a man who already shaves.